Welcome everyone to Mentes y Fronteras. Today we have my office neighbor, Nick, and he is a licensed clinical social worker here at the Metro office and Lehigh. Today we're going to be discussing what is therapy, because we've done so many episodes, but we have yet to discuss what to expect in the therapy room. So thank you so much, Nick, for being here today.
Of course, thank you for having me today.
Today we're going to get into a really important topic, and I love it because it's our passion, right? This is why we're in the field. And we talk about this all of the time during our therapy evals, right, or intakes, because a lot of people have a misconception of what therapy is. But before we get into that, I want the listeners to get to know you.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Nick Rodriguez. First, I do have a stutter, so some words are going to sound weird, but I know what I'm saying. And then I've been licensed for going on 4 years as a licensed clinical social worker. And I see children all the way up to 18. And I see both English and Spanish clients, and general therapy and trauma.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what motivated you to become a clinical social worker?
So especially with kids, I think that kids need a lot of support, and sometimes kids don't necessarily get that support. And whether it's because of different circumstances or anything like that, I think it's very important that kids have consistency. And that's why I really wanted to really get into kids where, you know, not saying that my life was, you know, awful and stuff, but, you know, there are times when it's like, you know, if I had, you know, A, B, or C, how could things have been? And so now it's like, you know, I do find myself really feeling good about the work that I do with kids, because things can be consistent, especially a lot of the kids that I work with, you know, may not have a consistent dad or anything like that, where I know I'm not their dad at all. Like, and that's something that I explain. I'm not to fill this role, but it's nice to be kind of that, like, therapist mentor type to really help them, like, transition through life, especially when they're young.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because kids need stability, right? And
100%.
like you clarified, you're not, you know, the parent figure, right? And we're going to get into how that's not what we do at all, right? But you are that stable piece in their life in that moment, which is something that you would have appreciated. I know I would have appreciated that as a child. And so that's awesome that that's one of the main reasons you went into the field. And with your schooling, where did you go to school?
So I got my bachelor's in social work from Florida Gulf Coast University, and then got my master's in clinical social work at Florida Gulf Coast as well. And I also had a concentration in medical social work as well.
Awesome. So how did you fall into trauma?
So I did take trauma-informed care. That was part of the medical social work concentration there during my master's program. And so then when I came here to Elite, I know there was an offer to kind of, you know, start, become a part of the shift program. And so that's when I really thought about, you know, it could make an even greater change outside of just general behavioral therapy, focusing on trauma. Because, you know, you already know this, a lot of children have a lot of trauma, have a lot of, you know, things that they need to work through. So that's even getting a greater, greater chance at helping more kids that need help.
Definitely. And I see a lot of adults. I do see kids, but I do see more adults. And so I'm glad that we have your perspective, and your specialty is with children. And getting kids to come to therapy can be quite hard. Some kids are like, Mom, take me to therapy. I know that's how I was, but that's not everybody's story. So what would you say to parents that think their child would benefit from therapy, but maybe the child's resistant?
So I think, I know parenting's hard. Like, I know the parent-child relationship is very important, and I know parents don't want to force their kid to do things the child does not want to do. I think a lot of it has to come with the buy-in of the child, where as adults, right, we're motivated by, we have bills to pay, we want nice things, we may have kids that we need to support, right? Like, we're motivated by that in life. Where kids are born and kids want what kids want. Right? Where, you know, parents, we don't always want to give them everything they ask for, but if we want them to kind of engage in things that we think would be beneficial for them, sometimes we have to get their buy-in for it. And so it's really working with them, where it's, I would say, similar to where if kid doesn't want to go to school, it's working with the kid to get to school. It's not bribing them. It's more of like, okay, how can we get it to where it's a win-win situation, where the parent gets listened to, and the kid gets and the kid does things that they need to, but also the kid gets to enjoy being a child.
Right. And building that autonomy, right, of that buy-in. It's not mom and dad or parents are forcing the child to go to therapy. They're having an open conversation that's age appropriate.
Yes, 100%. Because I know the way that I explain it is, I think traditional forms of parenting are, I'm the dictator and you do it because I say so. Whereas now we really want to kind of transition to, it's a democracy where I'm going to hear what you say. I want to validate what my kid feels and I want to hear their opinion. But at the same time, if a rule is a rule or a responsibility is a responsibility, they're still going to have to do it. But at least I'm hearing them out and having that conversation.
Definitely. And, you know, confidence comes from competency, right?
Yes.
And the ability to do things on our own and think for ourselves. And that's what we're fostering in children, right? And
exactly.
That's part of the buy-in process. Now, for maybe an adult, right? Maybe there is an adolescent or an adult and they're thinking about therapy. Maybe they have friends that are already seeing a therapist and they're like, hey, you should try it out. What would you say is therapy? And we're going to spend more time on this.
Yeah.
But in your opinion, how would you word it?
So everybody should go to therapy at some point in their lives. It's not saying that they need it. It's not saying that they're mentally ill. It's not saying there's anything wrong. It's just therapy is a place to go to where if you need help trying to change something, we can change that. Or if you just need someone to just vent to and really understand something from a third party perspective, that's what it is. Therapy is designed to help you process things, where the main way that we process is talking. That's why it's important to, you know, express yourself and talk and, you know, find people that validate how you feel. They may not agree, but they'll validate because that's how we process and that's how we move forward.
Right. And therapists, we're not co-signing, right, behavior. That's not helpful. But we are going to validate the person's feelings because every emotion is valid. I just always say it may not be rooted in a realistic perspective, right? Because our perspectives can shift. And I agree, therapy, there's different types of therapy too. And we'll get into that towards the end. But when I have someone new in my office, I like to share how therapy has different steps.
Okay.
So for example, like building the relationship professionally with your therapist, this is somebody new, this may be very foreign, you're talking to somebody you don't know, and there's a reason for that, right? Because it's going to be unbiased and we have clinical training, right? Versus talking to your friend, which is also very helpful. Two different purposes. With therapy too, once we kind of get into understanding our patient, learning about them, they tell us, okay, this is what's not working for me, like you mentioned, and I want to find maybe a more effective way of doing this, like effective communication, conflict resolution skills, right? Or maybe they have anxiety, right, with public speaking, and a lot of their job has to do with sales, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be a mental illness per se, right? So can you elaborate a little bit more on your perspective on that?
Yeah, so I think we use the term mental illness a lot, and I think that really groups a lot of things into the same thing, where there's a lot of different diagnoses and things out there. And I also think that when people think of therapy, you know, they think, oh, there must be something wrong. Where, as you pointed out, the whole purpose is to improve or work through things that we may have been through before, right? So we see a lot of anxiety, depression, like that's a lot, that those are actually more common than what we talk about. And I know we're focusing on specific things right now, but I think as a society, there's things that we don't talk about because we don't want to talk about them. But if we don't talk about them, that doesn't mean that it goes away or doesn't happen. The more we talk about them, the more we can actually normalize specific things. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the main focus, where it's one thing to say, hey, I want therapy so I can help, you know, improve just my overall life because I want to, you know, do better with my family, with my job and things like that, compared to, you know, there's diagnoses where, you know, things can really affect how you live. And I think we can treat them the same way, but I think there are different reasonings for why we do therapy.
Right. And one thing I like to point out, and it's the idea that if I go to therapy, I will never experience stress again, or that is the success of therapy, right? Yeah. And I remember being a student going into my grad program, not fully understanding what therapy was, and I was a therapy student. So one of my professors, and it was really profound what she said, and it's about finding meaning and purpose through pain, right? Okay. And building tolerance, distress tolerance for things that sometimes we can't predict and we can't avoid. So yes, we can reduce a certain amount of distress in our life by making certain choices and setting boundaries. But at the end of the day, the expectation that we're just going to be functioning with no stress, that's not realistic.
I agree 100%. And, you know, I kind of say something that's kind of like what you said, where I point out with clients where if you're anxious or you feel uncomfortable or you don't feel good about doing something, the fact is you did it, right? Where I think when we say the word, I want to handle things better. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we think of handling as I'm doing it and there's no problems at all and I feel great. Mm-hmm. When if you have, for example, anxiety, if you're going out and you're doing more and you're feeling anxious, we're focusing on the fact you're doing it, you're pushing yourself, you're exposing yourself. Because as you said, there's probably not going to be a time when it's like, I feel 100% amazing every time I do this from here on. It's going to be days we feel good, days we feel bad, but the point is you're doing the stuff.
Exactly. And over time, right, hopefully with the progressive exposure, so exposing ourselves to triggers and situations that are a part of our life, like there are some things that we can just eradicate, right? We can avoid certain triggers. So like for me, if I don't like to go on a boat, right, because I get seasick, which happens, then I just don't go on boats, right? Yeah. That's not really a big part of my life. But if I feel anxious driving and I live in a city like Fort Myers where I have to commute, that's something I'm gonna need to work through, right?
Exactly.
And that's part of therapy and working with your therapist depending on their treatment modality, which we'll talk about towards the end. But those are some main tidbits to expect when starting therapy is setting measurable goals, right? And realistic goals. Because if we say, I just don't ever want to have a bad day, then we're seeing therapy as pass or fail. And it's just not that rigid.
Yeah.
So let's kind of dive into modalities. Like, what is that? You know, what is CBT? What's EMDR? Because there's a lot of stuff on TikTok. And we may think, oh, I need this, right? Or I want that kind of therapy, or this therapy is bad. So elaborate a little bit on the diversity of modalities in therapy.
So there's many different types of therapy out there. Now, a lot of them are based in traditional talk therapy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the interactions that occur with your therapist are going to be kind of the same because we just talk about things, but it's different structure. And then there's also forms of therapy where you talk a lot less, right? So if we look at CBT, right? Cognitive behavioral therapy, that's very heavy with talking and repetition, where the whole foundation is how we think about things affects how we feel and that affects how we act. And so that's really kind of one of the main modalities that we see. I know there's DBT as well. Now, you probably know that a little bit better than me if you want to talk about that one. But yeah, there's a lot of just traditional talk therapies. Just our goals really determine what route we take.
Right. And there's no right or wrong. It's just what works for you. So if you're listening, right, and you're like, okay, well, what therapist is going to be best? It's going to be best for you. Like, your friend may find DBT very helpful and you try it out and it's just not meshing. That doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you or therapy's not working for you.
Yeah.
No, that's why we have so many different types. You just may respond, well, maybe more to EMDR, right? Or ACT. So it's trying it out. And like in another episode, I talked about getting haircuts, right? We may get a bad haircut. Doesn't mean we never get a haircut again, right?
Yeah.
We got to find the right stylist. Dialectical behavior therapy, I use a lot because I work with a lot of individuals with like borderline personality disorder, eating disorders, and it's very helpful for these diagnoses, but also for people that may not struggle with a mental illness, right? Maybe they're just struggling with adjustment. So DBT is dialectical thinking, that there could be opposing truths at the same time. So two things can exist even if they contradict, right? And I like to use the word and because but's very invalidating and I hear it a lot, right? Like, oh, well, they did this, But, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, there's two truths, right? There's two perspectives, and it's about being a little bit more nuanced. So that would be like DBT. And like you said, CBT, in my opinion, is like the bread and butter of talk therapy, yeah. right? We learn, that's usually the first modality we learn yes. in university. So it's something that's very helpful for people. EMDR, so we're both trained in EMDR. Let's explore that, because that one's a really hot topic right now on social media, and a lot of people are interested in, for good reason. It's evidence-based, and it's very helpful. So yeah. kind of share a little bit about that.
So EMDR, so first, that stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Always a mouthful there. But basically, there's talking, but it's not nearly as much talking as traditional talk therapy. Again, the whole goal is to process things. When we talk about things, as I said before, we process them. EMDR is the same thing. Our goal is to process things. It's just we do it in a very different way. Like we sleep, right? There's like five stages of sleep, and the stage we have where we, you know, process information from the day before, that's REM sleep, right? Rapid eye movement. So it's a natural process that our body already does every single night. And so that's how it starts. Okay, this is good. I learned how to drive. I'm gonna keep this. You know, this interaction happened. I don't really need to keep that. That's trash. And so what EMDR is, it's basically we're doing that, just we're kind of hand cranking that process using bilateral stimulation, which is basically somebody, you know, following my finger back and forth. I know we have a green dot on the screen that goes back and forth, tapping, things like that. But it's a normal process that we do every single night.
Exactly. And it's not hypnosis, right? It's not magic. I know a lot of patients, when I introduce it, they get a little apprehensive, right? And understandably so. I mean, it's foreign, right, to them. But as we talk a little bit more about it, like you said, it's not something that our body doesn't understand, right? Yeah. It's something that's very natural and can be very helpful, especially I find for analytical thinkers, people that are very insightful and they understand like therapeutic verbiage and things like that can be very healing for them. And it's not just for PTSD. Again, it could be for adjustment, grief, loss, interpersonal conflicts, right? Because it all roots from belief systems and attitudes. Yes. So EMDR is super powerful in that way. With kids, how would that work? Because it can be kind of hard, right? With kids' attention span. So how has that been for you?
So with EMDR, I know there's two approaches that I take. So first thing, especially being trained with EMDR and play therapy, I do use something called EMD, right? So which same thing as EMDR, just we don't reprocess things. But it's basically the thing where, you know, I have the child think about, you know, the bad situation that occurred. We have them give a name to it, because again, it's about them having the control over that. And then we identify, okay, what's the negative thought that you have about yourself? And then what's the positive thought? And then we just use the bilateral stimulation to kind of bring down how distressing that thought is. And with kids, it's fun. I know I have a bag where I have some foam swords. So the whole point of bilateral stimulation is to just move our eyes back and forth, right? Because that kickstarts the whole reprocessing and or the desensitization. So with kids, I either have the swords and we just go back and forth, and we hit, and you know, we like play fight, but they're engaging in therapy and they don't know that. Or drums, we hit drums back and forth, or we do like tiger taps, or it's like butterfly hugs. So for kids, it's a lot more, I'd say, dynamic with them, because I think with adults we can say, hey, we're gonna start this, look at my screen or follow my hand. Where with kids it's like, hey, we're gonna do something fun, but then it's something that's also gonna help you in the long run.
Absolutely. And having a foundation of therapy for a child that's positive is so important, because I've heard from a lot of adults who are like, oh yeah, my first experience with therapy, you know, they just kind of sat me in a chair and asked me all these questions, and there was a clipboard, right, and a desk in front of me, And you make sure that therapy is very relational, which is super important for kids, right?
Yeah.
And again, going back to finding the provider that's right for you, right for your child, and giving it time and patience, because, you know, the first person you get set with may not be the best fit, right?
Yeah.
And that's not the therapist's fault, right? At times, I mean, there's certainly, like, times things are unethical, but most of the time not, right? It's just the vibe of therapy is not a good match.
Yeah.
Really quick, kind of talking about misconceptions with therapy. One of the things that I hear a lot of is, you know, how quickly is this going to take, right? Can I get in and out in a month? You know, how long until I'm fixed, right? And fixed, I don't like to use, and we've been taught, right, to say treat, because fixed implies that we're broken and we're not, right? It's just things are not working out for us, and we just have to figure out a new way of doing it. And also timeline varies. So have you heard very similar things?
Yeah, I know, especially with parents, they ask, you know, how long it's going to take for their, you know, child's behavior to change and, you know, such things as that. And I know I say, well, it really depends. You know, everybody's different. I can't give you a specific, like, you know, day count, month count, anything like that. Because one, if it comes to that point and things aren't where the person wants them to be, okay, well, then what does that mean? But then it's also the fact that there's so many factors that can influence somebody's progress in therapy. So it's really just dependent on each person.
Exactly. And being flexible, right? Because sometimes things happen and we can't make it to therapy once a week or every other week.
Yeah.
And so we have to be flexible with ourselves and that it's an ongoing process. Also, too, another misconception, once I go to therapy, I'm good for the rest of my life. So absolutely not. Right? There's, again, adjustments. I love using that word because we all go through adjustments, not only physical, right? Mental. So you may get married, right? And then you're going through an adjustment that you may need assistance on, or you're retiring, right? And you need assistance with that. Starting grad school or university, starting middle school, that's a really difficult time.
That's huge, yeah.
You know, no one can pay me to go back to middle school. So a lot of different chapters in life, it's okay to go back, right? And also go back to a different therapist. Would you say the same thing?
Yeah, I think that therapy can always be beneficial, and it doesn't have to be a very long-term thing. Again, it really depends on the person's goals and what they're, you know, trying to do and trying to, you know, work through. That's really going to determine the length of therapy. But also, again, to your exact point, I can work with a kid and then I can see the kid, you know, starting at 8, and then, you know, the kid's like, you know, 12 at some point and things are fine, right? And then, you know, the kid can turn like 15 and be going into high school, and then it's like, hey, like, we really need to talk to someone because this is a really big change, and maybe their grades aren't going well, maybe they're getting some trouble now. And so, like, every transition, again, it's not that we need help with things, it's just it is very helpful to have somebody that we can kind of, like, talk with and kind of work things through with, because life gets stressful.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Another thing, just to kind of get in closing, is when patients are doing great, they're hitting that point where they're using their skills, they're, you know, they're communicating different, life's going awesome, but they feel anxious to stop doing therapy, right? So how do you navigate those conversations? Because the whole goal of therapy, we are in the business of not having our patients come back. And what I mean by that is our goal is not to keep you in our office, right?
Yes.
It is to equip you with skills and independence and confidence that you're going to be able to navigate pain and distress, right, on your own. And of course, adjustments happen, we come back. But how do you navigate that conversation when you're seeing a patient doing great and they feel a little anxious stopping the frequency of, like, once a week or every 2 weeks?
So in that conversation I have, whether it's with the client or whether it's with the parent, I first want to make sure that it's not like, hey, you're doing good, bye, right? It's like, you know, because I know there can be some intense feelings about, hey, this was a consistent thing and now it's not. And so I think the biggest thing for me that I try to do at first is I really try to just space things out, where it's like, hey, I saw you every week, let's do every 2 weeks for a little bit, because then we can see how you're handling more time apart than 2 weeks to maybe a month or 2 months, right? And then once we see, hey, it's been like a month or 2 months and it's that's happened a few times and you've been doing fine, it's normal to be anxious about transitions as as you said, all these adjustments. It's normal to feel that way. And when we're having a positive discharge from therapy because all the goals have met, I think it's really important to just validate how the client feels, but really also following it up with very positive support, because it's saying, hey, this is what we've worked to. And the as you said, like earlier on, is you can tolerate a lot more. That doesn't mean that we're not going to have a bad day, but you can tolerate this and you can do this. But also kind of keeping that door open of like, if you need anything, you can come back, but right now it's important for you to go out and, you know, try to tolerate and function and cope on your own, because that's the whole goal.
Exactly. And the way I relate, right, and I try to talk to my patients, because I like to tell how it connects to me too when it's appropriate, is when I was a student, you know, we first started shadowing, right?
Yeah.
Our supervisor who was licensed, and we shadowed them doing sessions. And then eventually we started to facilitate and be the therapist while they shadowed us, giving us feedback, and we had that support. At one point, we have to go off on our own and sit with that anxiety, right? And build those skills. So eventually now we have our own interns, right? Which is awesome, and going through that process. So it's very similar that, again, anxiety is a natural emotion. It can be very helpful. So I'm hoping that this conversation kind of clears things up with what to expect with making an appointment, right, at Elite DNA. Is there anything else that you feel like we left out before we close?
There's nothing that really comes to mind. It's just, again, I do just want to say that one point that I said before, therapy is not just because there's, not saying that we need help, not saying that there's something wrong. It's just, I do think everybody can benefit from therapy at some point in their life. And it doesn't mean that, you know, that anything is going to be wrong or anything like that. But it's just more of like, it is nice to just have that person that you can talk to and kind of work through things with.
Absolutely. It's no different than going to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
We go to the doctor, right? If we are sick and we need help, we don't try to just fix it at home, right? And we have guidance, you know, through that, and teaching, right? We have teachers that help us. We don't just try to self-teach. We are meant to be in community and connected, and that's what therapy is. So.
Exactly.
I appreciate you being here, Nick, and sharing your expertise.
Yep, thank you. Thank you for having me again.